Hi, Najib.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Let me introduce this. I'm Robert Wright of Blogging Heads TV, and this is an episode of Worldwise, and you are Najib Sharifi, and you are in Afghanistan, and you have written for foreignpolicy.com, among other periodicals, and you've worked for a number of media organizations, in fact, including the New York Times and the BBC. And in addition to that, you run, you're director of an NGO, right?
Yes. I am director of an NGO called Afghanistan New Generation Organization. It works on activities towards empowerment of youth in Afghanistan. And, youth make the majority of the population in this country. That's why youth empowerment is so important.
Okay, and maybe you can tell us a little more about that later, after we've assessed kind of the overall situation in Afghanistan. I wanted to start by asking you about something that made the news a couple of weeks ago when a U.S. drone strike killed a Pakistani Taliban leader, and the Afghanistan President Karzai, complained about that, or about the timing of the strike, or something, right? Can you explain why he had problems with that?
It's very difficult for me to, comment on why he did that. But all I can say is that by making such comments, he does not represent the sentiment of the Afghan people, because Afghan people are the prime victim of terrorism and terrorists, and obviously they will be glad when they see that. A leader of the terrorist group is eliminated. But I could probably, Afghan government had established negotiation links with the group, and that had created some hopes for, negotiation and bringing in the terrorists. That's why, President Karzai may have made that remark. But in general, what's important is that he does not represent the sentiment of the Afghan people, and Afghan people were happy with the news of a top terrorist leader getting killed.
Getting killed in Pakistan. Now, what is the status of those talks that I guess he claimed were imperiled by the strike? Is do you have much hope for talks involving the Pakistani Taliban or the
Well,
Taliban generally?
it's very secret. I could say that probably one of the most secrets of the state. What the negotiation that's currently happening with the Taliban and some other terrorist groups. Again, it's difficult for me to comment on where exactly it is, but considering the consistent failure in attempts to bringing in the Taliban, I myself don't have much hope that such negotiations will lead to positive results, because Taliban, at the end of the day, they are an ideological product. And if as soon as they abandon their ideology for other pragmatic reasons, they will just lose the whole philosophy of their existence, and they will not be able to recruit any more people. So this is why I don't have much hope for negotiations.
And do you see the Taliban as a fairly unified phenomenon, or do you see it as factionalized, or see, a Pakistani Taliban as opposed to an Afghan Taliban, or what?
Well, they're factionalized in the operation and tactical level, but they're all unified in terms of ideology and the faithful objectives that they pursue. So mm-hmm. when it comes to that, I don't see any fragmentation in their overall goal.
So if you don't have hope for negotiations with the Taliban, what is your hope for how things will play out? Of course, the American troop presence is declining rapidly, and it's not entirely clear that there will be any troops left at the end, I guess. That's under negotiation. But how are you hoping things will play out in light of the departure of American troops?
Well, firstly, we are very hopeful and confident that there will be a residual force who would be helping Afghan security and defense forces in their fight against the Taliban. But other than that, today we have an army despite the shortcomings that exists, we do have an army, which we didn't have before. We do have police force, which despite all, pitfalls, they have significant achievements. And we have an intelligence force that's becoming stronger and stronger. So we basically rely on our own forces above all on the resistance of Afghans against any dark, extremist, and medieval force like the Taliban. This is what this is something that makes us hopeful, and this is something that creates the biggest bulwark against any return of extremist or fundamentalist force or regime. Yes, we are grateful for the assistance the international community and international forces have provided to Afghanistan, but at the end of the day, we have to stand our own feet, and I think we are in the right direction towards that aim.
Okay, and how would you assess the recent history, the last year or two, in terms of where the momentum has been heading in the fight with the Taliban? Who has been gaining ground and who has been losing ground?
Well, in the past 2 years, the Afghan international forces have gained a lot of grounds, and the momentum has changed. For example, in 2009, the momentum was in the hands of the Taliban, but today it's in the hands of the Afghan forces for the most part, and to some extent the international forces. But we've got to keep in mind that this war is a war of perceptions for the most part. And what we, Afghan government and international community, have failed big time in is the propaganda side of the war. And we haven't paid sufficient attention to the importance and value of that component of the war, and that's why Taliban are still perceived as a big threat, whereas in reality they do not have the amount of force that many people believe that they have. They do not have that power that many people believe they have, but the fact that they have managed to get sufficient airtime, that's still kept them relevant and in good shape in the eyes of both Afghans and international community, whereas in reality, if you compare it, we are in much bigger and better position compared to them militarily.
And is that particularly true in the cities? In other words, what ground the Taliban does actually hold, is that confined largely to smaller villages and rural areas?
Could you please repeat?
Is what ground the Taliban does actually hold, does that tend to be in smaller villages and rural areas, whereas the cities themselves are not Taliban strongholds?
Absolutely, because we've got to keep in mind that this war is a guerrilla war. We do not have conventional you know, fighting going on. And what happens is that they intimidate people, and they create fear, and they assert their dominance by creating fear. And they can do that in cities, you know, where we have the presence of our security, Afghan security forces, and the presence of the government. But in remote places where the Afghan security forces does not have a good footprint, or sufficient footprint, I shall say, and, you know, where Afghanistan's geography does not allow them to have sufficient footprint. It's basically those areas that come under the influence of, and I don't want to use the word control, it's more a matter of, you know, influence, that come under the influence of the Taliban. And again, it's more a matter of creating fear and, you know, asserting their dominance by that.
Okay. And so your view is that even in the parts of Afghanistan that we would be considered, relatively speaking, Taliban strongholds, your view would be that there isn't much actual sympathy for the Taliban? I mean, I assume that the Taliban would say that they stand for these religious values that are probably somewhat more commonly held in rural areas than in urban areas, I would guess. But is your view that doesn't mean that there's much actual sympathy for the Taliban in the areas that are most under their influence?
No, there isn't, and it's decreasing. And the reason is that people are witnessing, or people are seeing, the true faces and the essence of the Taliban. And people have realized that they do not represent Islamic values. For example, blowing up and killing people in the mosques while they are praying. Where and how can it represent Islamic values, you know? For example, blowing up and killing children, how can it represent Islamic values? For example, killing women, innocent women and men, how can it represent Islamic values, you know? So the more time passes, you know, the more people get to realize the true essence of the Taliban. And I could say that, you know, that the sympathy that they used to have, it has reduced. The sympathy that they used to have in the remote areas, it has significantly reduced by, you know, when people notice their evil actions, and when people notice their, you know, fateful and unacceptable actions on daily basis.
Mm-hmm. So if there's not much sympathy for the Taliban, even in the villages, and the main problem is a failure to project security into those areas, why is it that even during a period of fairly robust American presence, when there were a lot of American troops and a lot of American money being spent on Afghanistan security forces, we were still not able to do the job?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's because the Afghan government and the international community have also failed to provide the right or the needed prescription to the local people. Because talking about the Afghan government, you know, it's failed to provide people with justice, it's failed to provide people with security, and talking about the international community, the international forces, some of the mistakes that they have committed have been a big reason behind the perpetuation of, not only Taliban's ability to recruit fighters, but also to the radicalization of some people in remote areas. So it's mainly because people have not had the people have not been able to find the right camp to go and support. This is the reason I attribute to that.
Okay. Now, there will be an election next year. President Karzai is not eligible to run. When exactly is the election going to happen, and how do you expect that to play out? Are there already leading contenders for the presidency?
There is a lot of activities going on about the elections, and there is a significant amount of enthusiasm on the part of Afghans, particularly young Afghans, about the coming elections. The candidates are trying really hard to win over their target audiences, and at the same time, the people are keenly interested in seeing how it progresses. I'm pretty confident that we are going to have elections, but there are challenges towards that, and the biggest challenge is security, because the elections need to be inclusive and it needs to happen all over the country, but there are certain areas where I don't believe the elections will take place because of security issues. And also, there are questions and there are some concerns about the transparency of the process. It's too soon to say that it will not be transparent, but considering what we experienced in the previous elections, people have major concerns about transparency. So these are the issues that I hope the Afghan government primarily and also the international community take serious, so that we are able to have successful elections.
Mm-hmm. And is it already clear what the main issues are that the candidates will disagree over during the campaign? What important issues they will take different positions on?
They will take different positions on the type of system that we have in Afghanistan, the political system I'm talking about. They will disagree on the approach toward economic stability of Afghanistan. They will have different approach on major issues, for example, negotiation with the Taliban. They will have different views on, on transitioning Afghanistan into a self-sustainable country in terms of economy, in terms of security. So these will be the prominent issues that they will contend upon.
Mm-hmm. And what about issues that we actually read about in the American press a fair amount, such issues as the education of women, which is an example of an issue where, of course, the Taliban has its own view of things?
Well, this is an issue, but this is not one of the prominent issues here, because in Afghanistan we have many other major concerns which basically determine the future of the country. So this is a matter that's being discussed, but more of a subordinate one.
And what about the issue of a residual American troop presence? Do you expect that all of the candidates will support that?
I'm pretty confident that all candidates will support this, because this is a matter of vital national security interests and also national interests of the country. And we know that without the presence of international troops, mainly American troops, the threat against Afghanistan, against sovereignty of Afghanistan, both from the Taliban and from the rapacious neighboring countries will significantly increase. So I think they will all have a common position on that issue.
And talk a little about how America is viewed there. You wrote an interesting piece for foreignpolicy.com about the, you know, the idea of the American Superman.
Well, it's a very complicated issue to talk about because you see one layer of, you know, the society that's very sympathetic towards, you know, American Americans, you know. Then you see another layer that are very hostile, you know, and then you see another group that, you know, they hate America, but they can't wait to go and see America, or they can't wait to go and live in America, you know. So this is something that makes it very complicated, but in general, this Superman image that America had in Afghanistan, that has diminished significantly when people realized that the Americans have not been able to at least eliminate the Taliban in the past 10 or 12 years, you know. Well, they don't go into details of this war, that why makes it difficult, why it makes it for the Americans to, you know, gain victory against the Taliban. But it was for the first time in the history of Afghanistan that Afghans, with their own eyes, you know, saw America and saw American troops. And they realized that they were not the same as they expected them to be. So this is how I would present it.
Yeah, because in the past, America's intervention in Afghanistan had been mainly by proxy. So we supported the anti-Soviet forces in the 1980s, but, you know, our troops weren't there. And I gather that a certain amount of the Afghanistan impression of Americans had come from watching, like, the Rambo movies and things, right?
Absolutely. Hollywood, like, the impact Hollywood has left, you know, on the psyche of Afghans about Americans, like any other country, it is, you know, it's significant. It's beyond belief, you know. But when they saw it in the reality, that changed their image, you know, that changed their perception about America. Because when you see it, for example, in Hollywood movies, or when you see it in series like The 24, you know, the Americans, even if it's not like the structure, one guy, Jack Bauer, can do a lot, can do things that's beyond belief, you know. It changed it when they saw with their own eyes, you know. And there is also, I mean, let me not forget to mention, there is also a huge sense of conspiracy theory about the presence of the Americans, you know, because there are people, segments of the population, and this is a huge segment, that still believe that the Americans, the failure of the Americans to beat the Taliban in the past 12 years does not represent the realities. You know, they believe that the Americans do have the power to eliminate the Taliban in probably 2 days, you know, because of the technology and the forces they have. But they just want to keep the Taliban alive so that they can justify their presence in Afghanistan, so that they can in future send the Taliban to destabilize, for example, Central Asia, to destabilize China, you know, so that they could use the Taliban and their ideology to further their own aims in the region. And this is mainly the outcome of, you know, that perception that they have about Americans, or the perceptions that was common and that still prevails to a large extent. And it mainly comes from Hollywood movies, you know.
Mm-hmm. So that's one unanticipated influence, effect of Hollywood, I guess, on the world, that it would lead people to overestimate our power. You said opinions differ in Afghanistan on Americans. There are some anti-American voices and some pro-American voices. Can you talk a little about which populations tend to hold which view? In other words, is America more popular in the cities, less popular in the villages, or more popular among some ethnicities, or what?
Well, the Americans are more popular in the cities. They're more popular among the youth. I could even say they're more popular among women, you know, because they have been promoting issues like women's rights and, you know, human rights and stuff. And when it comes to rural areas, they're less popular. They're less popular among circles of, you know, religious conservatives. They're less popular among, you know, some of how hardcore ideological anti-Soviet fighters, Mujahideen, the so-called Mujahideen. But I can say that in this region, Afghanistan is probably, it's the country where Americans are the most popular, you know, because if you look at Pakistan, you know, there's huge, pervasive anti-American sentiment. If you look at Iran, right, there is pervasive anti-American, and also the Central Asian countries, you know. So in this context, Afghanistan is the country where there's a lot of popularity for Americans. So this is something that most Americans miss, and this is something that even the American policymakers have missed, because considering the relatively good image that they have in Afghanistan, you know, they could, you know, be use the country, use their popularity to make Afghanistan a model of, you know, successful democracy for the entire region. Because if the Americans succeed in Afghanistan, this will have a huge impact on the entire region. You know, not only it will increase the pressure of the public on their governments to work towards embracing democracy, more freedom, you know, more liberties, and would also increase you know, sympathy for Americans. And this is, again, this is something that the American policymakers have unfortunately failed to realize. Mm-hmm.
You said that a certain amount of the anti-Americanism is in the villages, in the rural areas. I would think that greatly complicated the task of the American military. I mean, I assume that the Taliban tried to exploit that suspicion of Americans in the very rural areas where, you know, the heart of the conflict with the Taliban was, right? Is that one of the reasons that the American troops had trouble being successful?
Absolutely, that's a very prominent reason, and that's you know, something, a factor that the Americans have failed to invest significantly on. And at the same time, you also need to keep in mind that those countries, neighboring countries who are against the presence of Americans in Afghanistan, they have invested so much on demonizing the Americans and the entire mission in the eyes of the Afghan public. You know, they have established numerous media outlets, you know, to propagate anti-American sentiment among Afghans. They have been, you know, spreading disinformation about Americans. For example, they burning Quran, the religious book of Muslims, or insulting other religious beliefs of the Afghan people. So all of these have had a major impact on demonizing Americans. But still, compared to the amount of his investment that these interests have put in demonizing the Americans and the mission, neither the Afghan government nor the American government has done anything. You know, it's been, the Americans, they're still, I mean, popular here. It's mainly because they helped Afghanistan, they rescued Afghanistan from the tyranny of the Taliban and the terrorists, you know. And this is something that the Afghan people have greatly appreciate and will always appreciate. But we have to pay sufficient attention to the importance of, you know, the war of information or propaganda war, and make the right decisions and take the right action about it.
Okay. Now, finally, do tell us a little more about what your NGO, the Afghanistan New Generation Organization, which I just realized actually spells out NGO itself, Afghanistan New Generation Organization. So I guess that's some sort of acronymic double entendre or something. But tell us a little bit about what the organization does.
Well, the organization mainly works with the youth to empower them so that they become effective advocates of change in their communities. According to statistics provided by the United Nations in 2008, 68% of the population of Afghanistan is under 25 years of age. So this creates a huge potential to be tapped in, you know, and to be utilized effectively for peaceful and progressive and prosperous future of the country. They present a huge source of hope for the you know, peaceful and prosperous and progressive country, because most of them are tech savvy, particularly the ones who live in the cities. You know, most of them have great ideals for change, for progress. You know, most of them, you know, want to break with the traditional way of, you know, handling issues and affairs in the country. And most of them want change because they have the biggest stake in change. They have the biggest stake in peaceful and prosperous and progressive country. But they create this huge force. Unfortunately, the Afghan government has not realized to use them or to create, to give direction to this, to the youth. So what we are doing is to empower them and provide them with the tools further their objectives, and to raise their grievances, and to mobilize around civic and volunteer activities, and to raise their voice for the ambitions and the ideals they have. For example, one of our big interventions is, providing them with the tools and the skills of media production, you know. Considering the fact that social media is greatly expanding in Afghanistan, they have managed very effectively to promote their ideals through creation of media, you know, and getting them, for example, broadcast on local TV stations or even, you know, international media outlets, and also use social media as a very effective platform to raise their voices for change. And we also encourage them to also raise their awareness about the importance of, you know, democratic values, and inform them as to what it really means and why is it good for the country, and how they could use their knowledge and skills in order to raise awareness of others in their communities, and in order to mobilize communities for the ideals such as democracy, such as human rights, such as women's rights. This is our main activity in at the Afghanistan New Generation Organization. We also have a program called Afghan Journalist Safety Committee, which is mainly working to create a safe working environment for Afghan journalists, most of whom are young people, young adults, you know, young boys and girls. Mm-hmm. They basically run the show in the Afghan media outlets. So it's mainly empowering youth to become effective agents of change.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing very important work, Najib. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us at the end of your workday there and at the beginning of mine here. And maybe down the road, as things progress, you'll have a chance to check in with us again and give us a progress report.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Bob. It was nice talking to you, and I hope this was useful.
Very useful. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Nice talking to you, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye.